Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast.
Beckham into Sheringham and Solskjaer has done it.
Leicester City have won the Premier League.
Scholes against Emil Heskey. Could it be five? Yes, it is.
Frank De Boer singing out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful!
Host Anthony Kendrick, and I'm delighted to be joined by Peter Prickett.
Hi Anthony, hi everyone, hope you're all well.
Yeah, very good, thank you. Yeah, well, lots to talk about tonight. We're going to come on to talk about Manchester City winning the league, Arsene Wenger's leaving Arsenal, and also the relegation fight. But first of all, Mo Salah, the man of the moment, is the only place really we can start. He won player of the year, deservedly in your view, or were you a De Bruyne?
I'm delighted that he won it, but I was actually quite shocked. I thought De Bruyne would win it.
Mm.
That's not to say De Bruyne's had a better season. It's just that I felt that, given that they voted for quite early, at that point Salah was having a very good season. And it, in his last, sort of the last month, maybe a bit less than that, where it's gone, okay, it's not a good season. It is an unreal season, which just passed the voting. So I'm a little bit surprised that he got it because of that. But you only have to have a look at what has happened, what happened in the Champions League against Roma and the performances. And it's hard to argue against him.
It is. And I think what was so shocking about the Salah thing for me, because I expected it to be very close, but I believe it was like 70-something percent he won. But he won by a large majority when a lot of people thought it'd be neck and neck. Personally, I thought De Bruyne would deserve to win it more, but at that point. But, you know, it's not like it's an outrageous decision or anything in my view. It's, you know, we've had two incredible talents this year, but I just thought, with De Bruyne winning the league, I thought that would tip it, but yeah.
There seems to have been a little bit of a feeling that maybe since February, De Bruyne has tailed off a bit. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know if that's actually true. To me, he still looks like he's playing sensational football all the way through. Maybe statistically, his numbers have fallen away, or maybe City aren't. Look, City, you can get at them. They can be beaten. Look, Liverpool have beaten them. Look, they've been knocked out of the cup. Oh, they blew it against United. Mm. All these little bits, little chips away. It's not quite as great as you thought. And, oh, look at Salah. Look how great he actually is. And it's kind of just slid. The balance has just slid. De Bruyne has just slid down and Salah's risen up. Whether that's actually the case in terms of their performances, I'm not sure, but certainly it seems like that in the media presentation and the way that people are talking about the players, the fuss, if you like, surrounding De Bruyne just got smaller, and the fuss surrounding Salah just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
I guess there's a point though with De Bruyne that, you know, you take him out the Manchester City team and it would probably still be top of the league, still be doing very well, whereas Salah and Liverpool, take Salah out the Liverpool team, you know, Liverpool, it would make a bigger difference to the side in my view.
Well, there might be a case when if you looked at that around the league, probably De Gea should be footballer of the year then.
perhaps, but I think he only got about 2% of the 2% of the vote.
We know with these awards that generally, your goal scorers win them. Just look at the Messi and Ronaldo domination of the Ballon d'Or. It's goal scorers. It's rarely creators. It's even more rarely defenders. And good luck if you're a goalie.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit of a shame, really, that you don't see, you know, the likes of, say, Neuer or Philipp Lahm or, you know, someone like that. I remember the big thing about Lahm when Germany won the World Cup. But we might see a break from the Ronaldo-Messi domination with the Ballon d'Or, because Salah's odds have been coming in big time. As of this morning, he was second favourite, and I've literally just checked before we went on to record, and he's now joint favourite with Ronaldo to win the Ballon d'Or. Do you think, would you vote for him if it were you?
I think we're not even in May yet, so no. But having said that, Liverpool are basically two wins, well, a draw and a win, let's put it that way, from definitely winning the Champions League. Mm-hmm. They're big ifs if those things happen. If those things were to happen, he scored a couple of goals at the World Cup, maybe got Egypt out of the group stage, and he had a half-decent start to the next season, even if he got a dozen goals by Christmas. Mm-hmm. None of these things are currently inconceivable. So if that was to be what happens, he had every chance of winning it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, for me, it's all about that. If Liverpool win the Champions League, then Salah will win the Ballon d'Or. But, you know, if Real Madrid win it, which is the other realistic possibility, then Ronaldo, for me anyway, that's just the way it works. Whether he can do anything with Egypt at the World Cup, probably not. It would be, you know, impressive if he does, but I don't see it. I think it all comes down to the Champions League for me.
Well, again, World Cup tends to have a big influence, so we could see someone. If Germany have a good World Cup, if someone from Bayern Munich is heavily involved in that, and we see Germany getting to the final stages or winning it, Bayern have reached the semi-finals this year. There's a chance someone comes from there. Mm. So, again, the World Cup's gonna have a big say in who wins the Ballon d'Or.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the Champions League games themselves, you know, from a broader perspective, putting Salah to one side, fantastic performance from Liverpool for the first hour or 70 minutes or so, and then Roma have just given themselves that possibility of something. They obviously came back from a few goals down in the previous game, the previous round against Real, against Barcelona. That was very impressive, and Liverpool probably be disappointed to let that 5-goal lead slip a bit.
Yeah, Liverpool weren't looking great for 25 minutes. It was a bit. It was very average. And then Karius had his moment where he's let it sort of through his fingers, but he's got just enough on it to push it onto the bar. And then not long after that, Mane's got away and missed a sitter. And then he missed another sitter, kind of like Benteke did against Liverpool for Palace in a very short period of time. But that fired them up. And from then on, it was only about 15, 20 minutes of that second half, of that first half, sorry, and it was an absolute pummeling.
Mm.
And Salah scores a sensational goal, and they combine again, and Salah scores another sensational goal. And then the way they came out of the traps in the second half was extraordinary. They, you know, I think it was Robertson's shot that was blocked, and that could easily have been 6-0.
Yeah, it was Robertson, yeah.
But credit to Roma, they're still in the game. They're still in the tie,
mm.
theoretically, because of what happened in the previous round, and because despite Liverpool's improved defending, and it has been improved, there's still question marks. There's still question marks. We've seen them concede 2 goals against West Brom.
Mm.
We've just seen them concede 2 goals against Roma, seemingly from nowhere. They can let advantages slip, but they've got the firepower. Mm. Liverpool have got this immense firepower that will threaten anyone, even a side that hasn't conceded a goal at home in the Champions League.
Yeah, it's a fantastic record, and yeah. I think the thing, it's easy to be a bit negative on Liverpool, but then having said that, if you offered them a 3-goal advantage or even, say, a 2-goal advantage, putting the away goals to one side, going into the second leg, I think a Liverpool fan before the game would have snapped your hand off for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it's incredible that you win a game 5-2 and you're disappointed. I think the disappointment is, it'll only be a disappointment if the result doesn't go in Liverpool's favour in overall in the tie. It would be a massive, massive regret conceding the two goals.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you're thinking it's Champions League semi-finals. A team has a 3-goal lead. Surely they should, in a normal year, be through. But it hasn't been a normal year.
Mm.
Champions League.
And for both, so
normal.
Yeah, and for both teams as well. They're not, you know, in a title race or anything like that. In Italy, Roma were a distant third behind the two title protagonists. So I guess in a way they can put all their eggs in this Champions League basket rather than having to worry too much about the you know, about the league or anything. So I'm sure all the top players will be rested before the second leg and all that.
So Chelsea are 8 points behind Liverpool. That's Chelsea in fifth and Liverpool in third. And Chelsea have got 4 games remaining. One of them is against Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it is possible that Chelsea can overtake Liverpool and finish in the top four. How likely it is, don't know. But there is that possibility. So it could be a bit risky to put all the eggs in the Champions League basket. But, do you know, it's got to be worth it. For me, it's got to be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you finish fifth, but you win the Champions League. Oh, I think that's happened once before. It's got to be worth trying that. You can't go, no, we might win the Champions League, but let's make sure we finish fourth.
Yeah.
Maybe if Arsene Wenger's your manager.
Maybe under the old rules where the Champions League winners aren't guaranteed a spot in the following season's Champions League.
Yeah, and also now fourth doesn't have to play the qualifying round.
Mm.
They changed that rule as well, so the difference between finishing third and fourth isn't what it used to be either.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it's Stoke, isn't it? Liverpool's next game, Stoke at home, and Stoke are not in the best of form.
Yeah. Just looking at the other semi-final as well, Real Madrid went over to Germany to play Bayern Munich. They won that game 2-1. Didn't play very well, but that's sort of been typical of their form across the season, really. They've not played, they've just sort of dug it out, the results, when it matters. They're sort of nowhere in La Liga, but they just seem to keep winning in the Champions League.
They do enough in the Champions League, don't they? And I think that's kind of how they played last year as well. They know how to win it. They've got players who've got that experience of being victorious. They know what it takes. Winning 2-1 in Germany is a massive result for them. Huge. Having said that, though, if there's a repeat performance from the quarterfinals, they'll be out.
Yeah.
Because Juventus scored 3, and it was only the controversial penalty that saw Real through. So they're not there. Again, normal year, you've won the first leg of your semi-final 2-1 away from home. You've got a great chance, but it's not been normal. It's been a crazy month of Champions League football.
Yeah. No, I can't wait for the second legs because, yeah, as you say, it's on paper, you'd think Liverpool and Real Madrid are nailed on to go through. But, you know, you look at the quarterfinals and, you know, they're worth watching the games. They'd be very exciting. And, you know, we don't even work for BT Sport or anything when we say that. Just want to move on as well. I want to discuss Manchester City. We've sort of touched on it a bit. Obviously, the league champions, despite stuttering against Man United. I guess their target now is to break the points record. They're currently on 90 points. There's 4 games for them to go. 5 points off the record.
Every chance. every chance. And Chelsea, I think, have got the goal record as well. Ancelotti's Chelsea team. I'm not sure how many they are off of that, but it's not many. So they got every chance of setting a Premier League points record and a Premier League goals record. And I'm carefully saying a Premier League goals record because obviously the Football League record is way off in the distance. They won't get anywhere near that. I think they need nearly 30 goals.
They're five goals off the record goals record.
Four off the Premier League one.
Five off the Premier League goals record.
Five off the Premier League. With four games remaining, every chance of doing that. And they need 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine them not doing it.
It's hard to imagine them not doing it just in their next game against West Ham. You could see them just scoring five there and it's over. For the goals record, I mean.
Yeah, possibly. So, it's always interesting how people decide to judge what is the greatest team ever. Do they have to be unbeaten?
Mm.
That's another thing they brought up. Were they unbeaten? Because the Arsenal team did not set a points record. They did not set a goals record.
Mm.
But they were unbeaten. So are you the best team if you're unbeaten, or are you the best team if you get the most points?
I think this Manchester City team will go down, you know, for this season anyway, you know, this season will be remembered, I think. But I think for Manchester City, it's a case they need to do it over a few years. You can't become a great team in 1 year. If they win the next couple of Premier League titles, you know, they need to get probably a Champions League in there as well. You know, consistently do well over a few years, then it can be considered one of the greatest teams of whatever era you want to compare it to, for me.
Well, if they are to be considered a great... It's not about being so much being a great team, it's about being a consistently great team when you do that.
Mm.
You can still be a great team over the course of a season. So, you know, if you take Arsenal in isolation, that unbeaten season... Well, actually, either side of it, they didn't win the league. They didn't. I think they might have finished second in one of those seasons, either side of it. And there was nothing. It was quite a barren patch. But their place in history was sealed because they were unbeaten.
Mm.
But then we're talking about Ancelotti's Chelsea side were the ones who set the goal record. Do we consider that one of the great teams? Or is it largely forgotten? I actually think, unfortunately, that team is largely forgotten.
Yeah, no, so, I agree.
So it's funny how perceptions work.
Mm. Do you think, because for me, Mourinho's team, 2005, 2006, was it when they broke the points record? I think that team is considered a great Premier League side. It's not up there, but then having said that, it's not up there with the Invincibles, and it's probably not up there with some of United sides in most people's perceptions.
No, I mean, if you talk about United sides, you're probably looking at the one just after that, the Ronaldo Tevez Rooney side.
Yeah,
it's an extraordinarily good side. Did they set any records? No, they haven't got any of these points records or goal scoring records. So it's also the way teams play. There's so many little factors.
Mm.
Well, this City team for this season will be, I don't have any doubt that it will be remembered forever because of the way they've played, because of the number of points, because of the number of goals. If there's going to be a great legacy, they'll need to win another title or two in the next three seasons. And as you say, probably a Champions League.
Mm.
But then, how important is it that they win a Champions League to be considered a great team domestically? It's levels of greatness again, isn't it?
Mm. I guess the thing, it's obviously a different kettle of fish because it's Germany, but Guardiola isn't looked at in, you know, for his time with Bayern Munich with the same sort of fondness. It didn't quite go for him, is sort of the narrative we hear. because he didn't win the Champions League. I get that it's Bayern Munich and that winning the title there is, you know, effectively a foregone conclusion. But, you know, it's Guardiola, and is the bar that high for him that he has to win a Champions League or he's a failure, whether it's, you know, over the next 5 years, however long he ends up staying at City?
Was winning the league for City this season a foregone conclusion? If we'd said that at the start of the season, City are 100% going to win the league, wouldn't people have gone, no? I don't think... Yeah, if people were going to beat other nations over the head with how competitive the Premier League is, how hard it is to win, then how can it possibly be deemed a failure? Because people are looking at it that way. It's a failure that he's only won the Premier League. Only.
Mm.
Well, it's supposedly the most competitive league in the world, and they are 16 points ahead with four games to go.
Mm-hmm.
Of a Manchester United side managed by a specialist in winning trophies, who has spent massive amounts of money on players like Paul Pogba, Alexis Sanchez. You can keep listing these. They are great players in the United side. Never mind this Liverpool team that is currently unbeaten in the Champions League and likely to get in the final.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an immense achievement because of the competition. Or are people going to decide that it's a poor Premier League, it was easy for him to win, he should have won more?
Yeah, no, it's a valid point. I think if he wins a few Premier Leagues, he will be... I personally think that's all he needs. I was playing devil's advocate a little bit with the Champions League.
Yeah, I'm sure. But the thing is, there are people who do believe that. They don't want... It's like they don't want to accept that playing in this style and having a staunch ideological perspective is going to be successful.
Well, we'll see. I'm sure in a few weeks we'll be talking about Manchester City having broken the points and the goals Premier League record. And for me anyway, the only other side which were as good to watch for me is the Man United, the sort of 2007-2008 side. I personally think this City side is ridiculous. I think De Bruyne has been the best player. He's controlled games in a way I've not seen any Premier League player do, and I didn't think Guardiola would be as much a success at City as he has been. I think he's done incredibly.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to think of other Premier League teams that have been as good to watch and been as successful. I think the Arsenal side at their best were stunning to watch. So they're probably going to be competition for them. Chelsea have got these league winning teams, but have they played great football? I think the Ancelotti side that has largely been glossed over did play some stunning stuff. Stunning stuff at times. And actually the City side that Steven Gerrard won the league for when he fell over, They actually played some really good football. And both that Liverpool team and that City team were absolutely full of goals. Manchester City scored 102 league goals. Liverpool scored 101 league goals.
Yeah, I didn't realise they'd scored that many goals. But
that Liverpool team that finished second with Brendan Rodgers conceded 50 goals and finished second. I'm pretty sure to score that many goals, you're going to be playing some decent football.
Of course, yeah. And yeah, I remember that Suarez and Sturridge partnership just absolutely killed it. It was insane. But then, I guess similar to the current Liverpool side, they just couldn't defend.
Well, they conceded 50. Liverpool this season conceded 37.
So it's improved a bit then. At current rate, you'd expect low 40s over the whole season.
Yeah, I think Liverpool's defence is slowly improving. Van Dijk's made a huge difference. We've mentioned this before. They probably need another central defender and a goalkeeper. I don't think they'd have too many problems going forward.
Andrew Robertson as well, for me, has been an absolute revelation. The past couple of months, he's been excellent.
Yeah, he's made a massive difference. Playing, I think if you look back a little bit and you go, right, so the starting defence was, they had Robertson, Lovren, and Mignolet all starting. You just look back a little bit and you think, yeah, there should be no real surprise that they were conceding goals. With Matip and, a young right back, because it was at the start of this season, it was Gomez or Alexander-Arnold. And they both those fullbacks have matured a lot. So you look at that and you think, yeah, it shouldn't be a surprise goals are being conceded. Who survived from that? Well, Alexander-Arnold is in. Lovren is in because he seems... Well, I think Matip is injured at the moment, but Lovren seems to be a slightly better fit alongside Van Dijk. Goalkeeper's changed, left-back's changed.
Not having Mourinho anywhere near the side did massive help as well.
Yeah. And Robertson, he just sees danger much, much better than Mourinho does. Like, Mourinho doesn't see what's going on behind him, doesn't understand what the threats are on goal.
But then Alexander-Arnold didn't. You go back a few months and I think of the United game and he didn't. But then he had two excellent games against Manchester City, and it's crazy how quickly he's matured and learned. I think that's what it is. It's not like it's a steady progression. He's very quickly sort of improved.
Well, he had an awful half against Palace. And that was just before the City game. He had a terrible, terrible first half because they kept playing balls in behind him, and he got turned round for... I think Zaha nearly scored when he handballed it, and then he gave away the penalty just from those diagonal passes. I think that's part of why City picked on him in that first game at Anfield. They just kept hitting the switch across to Sané against him, and he dealt with it every time. And it's kind of like two really bad games in a row have been the making of him. That's a tremendous mentality, and bodes well going forward for Alexander-Arnold. Again, we'll see what happens.
I want to move on from that and talk about Arsene Wenger. He's obviously announced he's leaving Arsenal at the end of the season. It will be 22 years that he's managed Arsenal for. First of all, do you think it was the right sort of time for him to leave? Do you think now this season is correct? Or
I'm sure that anyone who supports a top six club would have liked Arsene Wenger to stay for as long as possible. Because they are not improving. Is it the right time for him to go from Arsenal's perspective? He probably should have gone before, really. He probably should have gone a couple of seasons ago. In fact, last year Arsenal didn't finish in the top four. He probably should have gone then. If it had been another club, he probably would have gone. He's got an extra year because of what he has done for Arsenal. And it's fair enough in a way, but I think it's almost cost them a wasted season. If you look back at this year, this has been a wasted season for Arsenal. And I don't even know if that changes if they win the Europa League or not.
I personally think the Europa League would be a great send off for him. You know, winning it, I think it's a lot. It has a lot more respect as a competition than it did, especially, you know, when they consider that they've got to play Atletico Madrid in the semi-finals. I think it's quite a prestigious competition compared to what it used to be.
I think we just feel like that in this country now because there's a Champions League place at stake, and before that, I think in general in England we didn't really care, but because of that Champions League spot, you know, the prestige has opened up for us.
Fair point.
Does it mean they've had a good season if they win the Europa League and they finish sixth? Hard. Yes, because they won a trophy, but you know, I'm going to go for Arsene Wenger's own terms. They've not finished in the top four, so it's a failure.
A lot of people would argue that Mourinho had a good season last season when the United it finished fifth, I think, or was it sixth? I can't remember. But either way, they finished outside the top four.
They won two trophies, and yeah.
But that was considered a good season.
Yeah,
by most.
I'd still put winning trophies ahead. You win trophies, you've had a good season.
Yeah, of course.
For me, not if you finish fourth, great. You've had a decent season. You finish fifth and you win a cup or two. You've had a very good season. You finish fourth and you win a couple of trophies. You've had a great season.
Yeah.
Only topped if you win the league or the Champions League. If you win both, legendary season, really.
Uh-huh.
For Arsene Wenger and Arsenal, it's been a long, slow decline. There's a relatively famous cricket book called Brightly Fades the Dawn, written about Don Bradman, who his heights of his career averaged over 100 with the bat in Test cricket, and he fell below his standards, but falling below his standards still meant that his performances were way above the average of most of his contemporaries. And that has rather been what's happened with Arsene Wenger over the last decade. Because he's shone so bright, what has happened since then just hasn't lived up to it. Yet most clubs in the country would bite your hand off for fourth place.
Yeah. I think it, you know, you've got to look back, and the fact that the Arsenal side, you know, as we've mentioned before when we're talking about the greatest Premier League sides, you know, the quality of football, they were incredible to watch back in the day. I remember watching the early 2000s, it was ridiculous. And I think the fact that he was probably the only manager who got anywhere near Sir Alex Ferguson, and that needs to be respected, and it's such a shame, I think, that he has to leave on this note with such a negative, because he probably should have left a few years ago. It's such a shame for me.
If it wasn't for Wenger, until Mourinho got here, United would probably have won 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, that needs to be remembered. And some people have made these points elsewhere, that the evolution and modernisation of English football really began with Wenger. Without Wenger, the game here doesn't evolve to the extent that it has. The bad habits, dietary habits, the training habits that are now the norm, a lot of it started with him. And what has started to happen is that things have progressed beyond what he introduced, and a lot of people say that he hasn't evolved quite with them, so he's slowly been overtaken. But what he brought to England in the mid to late 90s changed football here. And what we now see, quite a big part of it does come because of Wenger.
In terms of a successor, what are your thoughts?
Stick a pin in the board and see what happens. I don't think anyone knows. This is the fascinating and bizarre thing. You'd be lucky to get the same answer out of five people.
Yeah.
The classic question of, well, who's available is what comes up first. But it's complicated by the fact we've got this World Cup coming. And so there'll be people available after the World Cup who are not obviously presently available. And then there's people who are seemingly presently available, but actually they might already be lined up for a position at a national side post-World Cup. So it's a really tough time to be trying to recruit a manager.
Does it matter if there's a manager, say there's an international manager Arsenal want, does it matter if he's got a World Cup side and then he joins after the World Cup? I mean, I look at Louis van Gaal and him joining United. It didn't really, there was a bit of pre-season, a few things which he didn't plan, didn't have much involvement in, but he did, you know, the signings, it didn't really make a difference, and maybe they happened a little bit later, but overall I don't think it had too much of a negative impact.
I think it might be more of an issue for the national sides than it would be for Arsenal, because certain national teams are quite protective of it. Some think, oh, it doesn't matter that we announce that the manager is going after the tournament. Some don't want to announce that because they think it breeds instability. So it's just little factors that can make it awkward. And again, it just depends who it is they're thinking about. Or who it is that they already know has decided that this tournament will be their last because they've been international manager for 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. I can only think of one person who that might fit, which is Joachim Löw. I wonder if it is time for Joachim Löw to go into club football. And could he do that at Arsenal? Maybe.
Do you think it's a different game for the managers? Do you think, you know, because he's not really proven at club level, does that matter, or is that or am I making something out of nothing?
I think it depends on the manager and what their previous experience was. Lowe's an interesting case because he spent most of his career involved in international football, so it could be quite different, but it's not going to be completely alien to him. He's not stupid. He's been around. He knows what it takes to manage at club level. He's certainly will have spoken to enough experienced people, but it won't be a complete shock. The bigger part is probably, are his tactics up to what it takes in the current or modern game? Does he work well with players? Does he develop players? Can he identify the signings that he wants? That'll be an interesting thing, because with international football, you can't sign anyone. But of course, that's where the two strands are different. So, as with any appointment, you just don't know until it happens. Scolari at Chelsea was an absolute disaster, and yet he was courted by England, but he was also courted by other clubs around the world, and he managed at club level, and I don't think anyone would have expected that it had been as bad as it was. So I just think you just don't know. There's no guarantees with anyone. Ancelotti is a person who surely, if Arsenal are ambitious, he's got to be someone they've got to have a look at and see if they can attract him, although there's some rumours that he might be doing the Italy job, which is interesting that that suddenly sprung up because everyone was absolutely convinced it would be Conte. But Ancelotti, great first season at Bayern in terms of success, but second season, out the door after not very long.
There's quite a lot of managers, as we say in the hat, and Enrique is the favourite. Arsene Wenger got asked a question in an interview today, I noticed, and he sort of dodged it. He said he didn't really want to influence too much or say anything either way, which I suppose is fair enough. He can't really say too much, but he did say that he had a lot of respect for him as a manager, and I'm sure he would get a lot of respect from the fans, you know, because of his pedigree and what he did at Barcelona.
But then there's the flip side to that, which is what gets chucked at anyone who has managed Barcelona in the last decade, or indeed it was thrown at Zidane as well at Real Madrid. You've got three of the best attacking talents in the world. How hard can it be to be successful?
True, but then I would make the argument that he did put his own stamp on Barcelona for me. He did change them from the tiki-taka style he inherited to a more direct, more entertaining side. They were a lot more entertaining to watch, in my view. He made them a better side, in my opinion. It's a preference of styles, but he did his own thing, is the point.
I think he would also be a little bit of a risk, but he's been linked with Chelsea as well, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, he has.
I think if we're going to put a bet on, the bet is that Luis Enrique will be managing in England next season, just not where we do not know. It's very difficult to pinpoint who they want, because do we know what Arsenal want from their manager? Do they want fourth? Do they want top spot? Do they want someone who's going to bring in big signings and big names and have to look after them? Or are they going to be operating still on a slightly smaller budget and trying to wring everything they can out of talents? And if that was the case, then Thomas Tuchel might have been a good person to go for, but he seems to be lined up for PSG according to latest reports. It's such a merry-go-round.
The other option that goes for Arsenal is they could go for one of their former players in the betting, as they're all there. Mikel Arteta, Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry are all there. For me personally, I don't think they can appoint someone like that. I think there needs to be at least some level of experience. I don't know if you see it differently or.
No, I tend to agree with that. I mean, if you're looking at them as managers of the future, if they were inclined to, they might go for perhaps Ancelotti with Thierry Henry as his number two, but do clubs plan in that way anymore? I don't think they do. I think they just swoop in. Although I say that, they don't plan in that way. It seems that Manchester City have got the era lined up to be Guardiola's long-term replacement. So, again, I think that kind of is in the way of them appointing the era, because he's very much part of City's plans. Arteta's very highly rated, then. That would be interesting. But he's again, tied up with Pep at City. Tony Adams?
Is that a serious...
Well, if the criteria is ex-player, then just chuck it at Adams and Bold or someone like that. But I know that the reason I say that is there's a lot of people who go, oh, I'd really like it to be a former player. And there's a part of me that goes, why don't you just want, shouldn't you just want it to be someone who's a really good manager? And is Eddie Howe featured in the betting?
He's a way down. He's like 60-1 or something like that. I've not got the list in front of me, but yeah, he was a way down. Sean Dyche was 33. I remember that, but now, still a way down.
I find that really surprising, because last year, when there was talk about Wenger possibly going, Eddie Howe was a big favourite. I don't think Bournemouth have really been any worse than last year. So what's changed?
No, this was exactly going to be my next point, that neither of these two managers have been mentioned in the media at all, really. And the I think Eddie Howe would kind of suit them in a continuing sort of attacking a good style of football to watch.
A stylistic manner, yeah, but which is part of probably what goes against Sean Dyche, unless they want to revive the spirit of George Graham. Which I'm sure some might be up for, but because it's been 22 years of quite fluid, flowing football, that's probably going to be the way that they go.
But then with Sean Dyche, could you argue that his current playing style is by necessity to get the maximum out of a shoestring budget? If he had the budget, and if he had a team with Aubameyang and Lacazette and Ozil and all these other players, then he might favour a more expansive style of play. I think he's a very, shrewd manager who adapts his team very well to different situations. I think if he was a named Arsenal manager, then maybe we would see some sort of more... We wouldn't see Burnley Mark II. We'd see something different.
Well, at this stage, we just don't know, do we? It's a bit like people saying that about Sam Allardyce, Tony Pulis. Do they only play this way because of the type of players that they have at their disposal? There have been flashes from these guys that actually know that's not the case. I quite enjoyed the Sam Allardyce side when we had Djorkaeff and Okocha kicking around, and that was good entertainment. And then when Pulis went to Palace, suddenly they became quite an exciting attacking side. It didn't last very long. He eventually reverted to type, but we won't know until he moves. Would Arsenal be the team that take that punt? I don't know.
I'd like them to, but no, I don't see it personally. I don't see it. I think the only sort of punt we might see from Arsenal is going for one of their former players, which I wouldn't do myself, but I think is more likely than a punt on someone in the Premier League.
What about, I'm going to go a little bit left field here because of style of play, and also who his current assistant manager is, Roberto Martinez, currently at Belgium with Thierry Henry as his assistant. Style of play, even with Wigan, they played really good football. I say good football, people have different ideas of what good football is, but certainly an attack-based brand of football. They had a good season, first season with Everton, and then they fell apart defensively in the second season. And he's got Belgium attacking, because that was their problem under their previous coach. There's stylistic hallmarks there that would suit Arsenal, although the case could be that they might suit them too much and they really could be getting Wenger Mark II.
It's an interesting choice. It's not someone I'd have thought of. I don't know. I guess the question is, could he sort out a defence? Because at Everton, his first season, when he did very well, he inherited a good defence, and that Wigan side were great to watch attacking, but they couldn't defend. At Belgium, he's got the likes of Vertonghen and Alderweireld company, so he has a very good defence, which he's inherited from his predecessor. So I'm not sure. It'd be an interesting appointment, especially if Henry went with him. I guess that would be the obvious succession plan put in place. I don't know if Henry would make a good manager. It's hard to know. It's, you know, whether he's there by name and what he did as a player, or whether he does have that, you know, whether he would be a good manager.
Seems to be quite a good coach, right, in terms of the players responding to him. But again, being a good coach or being a good manager are not necessarily the same thing either. Interesting that you used the words inherited a good defence a couple of times about Martinez there, which is exactly what has been said about Wenger. So again, Wenger Mark II could be Roberto Martinez, but that could be exactly what they don't want.
Just to finish the show, I just want to do a quick mention of the relegation battle. Well, first of all, West Brom, they are basically down unless there's some sort of mathematical miracle. Looking above them, we've got Stoke and Southampton. Do you think there's any chance of those two getting out of trouble?
If I looked at their squads, I'd probably say, yeah, they have a chance. If you look at their form, it's utterly woeful. Although Swansea's currently isn't much better, I just don't see Swansea, Huddersfield, West Ham, Palace, I just don't see their run of results being bad enough, and Southampton and Stoke getting enough of an upturn to get out of it. I mean, Stoke played 35 games, Southampton played 34. So in that regard, Southampton probably have slightly more chance because they've got a few more stabs at it. Stoke have got 3 games left and they go to Anfield this weekend.
Mm. Having said that, though, after going to Anfield, their final 2 games are Palace at home and then they go to Swansea on the last day of the season. If they can get 2 wins out of that, and that's what they, that would be a must, really. That would put them on 35 points. But even then, that's probably even not going to be enough.
Yeah, that'd be really close. Probably not quite enough. So, is there a way out of it for Stoke and Southampton? It's looking increasingly unlikely, I'd say, and that's good news for Huddersfield, Swansea, Huddersfield, West Ham, Palace. Brighton with 36 points look safe.
You say that, but Brighton have got a horrible run in, as I recall.
Their form's not very good either. I just had a look at that. The last 5 games, 3 losses and 2 draws.
Well, they play. They go to Burnley this weekend, and then following that, their final 3 games are United, City and Liverpool. So you could quite easily see them getting no more points this season.
But it's still, they're still currently 7 points ahead.
Mm.
So Stoke, if Stoke won all 3 games, they could go ahead of them. But that'd be 3 wins in a row. I don't think they've done that.
No.
In some time. And Southampton,
well, if I just
theoretically go ahead. But I don't do, forgetting about all this, having watched the teams play, do we see them getting enough points?
I don't see them getting anything. I've watched Stoke quite a few times recently, and yeah, they don't look like they can get out of it. They don't have enough players who are turning up on the days. I don't see it. I think they appointed the wrong man in Paul Lambert when times were tough.
But these clubs going down, maybe less so West Brom, but Stoke and Southampton going down is quite good news for teams from 7th down to 17th, because they can really strengthen for next season by picking at Southampton and Stoke and a little bit at West Brom, because there are some very good footballers in those squads. Mm-hmm. So I said, if you look at the squads, you'd say, yeah, surely they've got a chance.
Yeah.
But they're, at the moment, they're not doing it, obviously, but someone like Shaqiri could be playing in the top 16. Not in the side every week, but he'd certainly be in the squad.
Mm, of
course. And people probably wouldn't blink too much about it.
Mm.
And Sven Southampton, just the thought of clubs coming in and picking the bones of those, they've still got some very good young players there, and they'll just come in and go, right, we'll take this one. Oh, James Ward-Prowse, yes, please, I'd love him in my central midfield.
Mm.
Or actually, Sean Dyche going, right, I want to get balls into the box for my forwards. Let's get Ward-Prowse. Let's put him in that Beckham kind of wide position, and he can just play balls in constantly.
Yeah. Romeo and Lamina as well in midfield, they're both do a job at a Premier League club. Romeo in particular really suits the Sean Dyche team.
Yeah, I think Lamina's been linked with Liverpool at some point this season. He was very highly rated at Juventus.
Mm. He's had good individual games, Lamina, for Southampton, but no consistency.
And they've not scoring goals, but they have got forwards who would, Charlie Austin, go somewhere. I know he's had injury problems this season. Gagliardini came in and was superb. He's had injury problems this season. So there's forwards who teams would go, yes, please, I'll have that player.
Nathan Redmond might even join Manchester City. He gets on with Guardiola well.
Yeah, well, there's a very good player in Nathan Redmond just waiting to get out.
Yeah.
And there are hints of it last season. They've got Buffel as well, who I think is a tremendously talented player that, again, someone needs to get the best out of. But you break the squads down, they've got enough talent and ability in there. It's just not working.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, for the management maybe the players' attitudes have been off. It could be many things, but they aren't doing what they should be doing.
Mm.
And again, great news for the promoted clubs, because all three teams have got a terrific opportunity to stay up.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the show tonight. You can follow us on Twitter on our new Twitter handle at V2 Sport Network. You can also follow Peter at Peter Prickett and myself at @_Kendrick. Also check out our website, v2football.com. Thanks for listening. It's good night from me and good night from Peter. Good night.
Good night.